Dave Emery here. This is for the record program number 890. Tracking from the far right. Update on the adventures of A.D. the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on February 19th of the year 2016. Hi there, boys and girls. Guess what time it is? That's right. It's time for another exciting episode of the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Yeah, and if you don't believe it, well, just stay tuned in for the next hour or so, and tune in, or actually I should say, read the printed description for the program when that becomes available later today, today being February 19th of 2016. In our last two programs, we have looked at information about both Glenn Greenwald, Edward Snowden's leaking journalist of choice, and Pierre Omidyar, who has bankrolled Glenn Greenwald's journalistic efforts in the wake of the so-called disclosures, unquote, coming from Edward Snowden. And as we have seen both in For the Record 888 and in For the Record 889, which were compendiums of information presented incrementally in previous programs, when you look at Glenn Greenwald and when you look at Pierre Omidyar, you find creatures who track to the far right. You find a fascist milieu, and you find individuals who are the exact opposite of what people have been told and what they have been made out to be. The same thing is true of Edward Snowden himself. We have presented way too much information in previous programs about Edward Snowden to compress it all into a single compendium. I thought that what we would do in this program is to review some of the information that we have presented about Snowden in the past, in particular the extent to which Snowden personally, who is the exact, like Greenwald, like Pierre Omidyar, he is the exact opposite of what he has been presented as being. I thought that what we would do is compare, in particular, Edward Snowden's economic views and his views on social policy with those being put forward by the Star Wars barroom crew who constitute the Republican presidential primary field. Because when you look at the Bring Back the Gold Standard, get rid of Ben Bernanke and so forth, when you look at the social and economic views of the Republicans, again, the Star Wars bar scene that is the Republican primary field, you find the same kinds of economic views that are held near and dear to Edward Snowden. And remember about Snowden, I have several nicknames for him. Obviously, Eddie, the old cartoon character Casper the Friendly Ghost. I also call him the Obverse Oswald and the Peach Fuzz Fascist. As we begin accessing information about Edward Snowden, not begin, but as we take a look at Snowden, we're going to begin analyzing his role as a CIA officer, and he was working for CIA in 2009 when, by his own account, he decided to suddenly sally forth on behalf of the welfare of his fellow human beings and resolute to stop at no sacrifice in order to better the condition of humanity, he undertook to do what he is doing. Well, Edward Snowden is a spy, and he is fronting for a very obvious intelligence operation. In our next program, we're going to examine Edward Snowden from the perspective of the late Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, an Air Force colonel who was the focal point officer for Air Force and other branches of the military when Alan Dulles was head of the CIA. We're going to take a look at the practice on behalf of the agency of infiltrating and gaining control of other branches of the government, the military in particular. That, however, is something we are going to get into much more next week. Now, in our discussions of Eddie the Friendly Spook, I have noted that the basic information, well, there are two levels of information in the Snowden presentations. One of them, if we are to believe what we have been told, consists of nothing less than the operational architecture of the NSA. I've made a few inquiries, and I wish I could give you a printed source for this, but there is none. Suffice it to say that what Snowden appears to have gotten a hold of, you cannot get a hold of the way he claims he got a hold of it. You cannot ask a few fellow contractors for their passwords, for their emails or secure accounts, and gain the operational architecture of the NSA. In order to do that, Edward Snowden was directed by a major intelligence service. I think that service really could be viewed as the underground Reich under the circumstances. I still think the whip hand in the Snowden operation was BND, German intel. However, the underground Reich slash transnational corporation slash GOP associated element of CIA looms large. That is the largest and most powerful element of CIA. And the more time passes, the more I think that element, the bad guy element, so to speak, it's kind of a morally simplistic way of looking at it, but it's basically accurate. That is the element of CIA that I think was directing Snowden. In turn, BND and Underground Reich pulling those strings as well. We're going to be examining how the debate about NSA and GCHQ surveillance has come from the far right. Now, in addition to information that Snowden could not have gotten in the way that he claims he did, and which basically has kneecapped the NSA, if the operational architecture of NSA is indeed in private hands, as we have told it is, then basically the NSA has been kneecapped. The question is, who would do that, and for what end would such a thing be done? We're going to ruminate about that more in our next program. I am perhaps somewhat remiss in the coverage of Snowden, given the fact that so much of what has been talked about actually has been known for a long time. Most of the Snowden, quote, disclosures, unquote, have been known for a long, long time. The very first post that I did, and I, in 2011, 2012, in the early part of 2012 and the first part of 2013 was recovering from a life-challenging illness, so I was not on the air. I began posting about Edward Snowden before I was able to cover that in programs. On June 13th of 2013, I published a post called Planet of the Apps. on the subject of those, quote, shocking, unquote, disclosures about NSA, GCHQ, electronic surveillance, and then in parentheses, capital Y, dash, capital A, dash, capital W, dash, capital N. Yawn. When I first observed all of the flapdoodle about Edward Snowden, I was basically, that was my reaction. You know, what is all of this gas about? Because basically, this has been known for a long time. It is not new that NSA and the GCHQ have been vacuum cleaning electronic communications. I have been speaking about it intermittently for about 20 years or so from open sources. And we're going to access some of those excerpts of programs in this broadcast. I want to stress that this is not an exercise in puffery or self-exaltation, but rather, when I first heard about the Snowden op, that's what it is, you know, my reaction was, you know, what are you kidding me? What is all this flap about? Then, when I saw how the media was ceaselessly flogging that, the New York Times in particular, the New York Times is America's best individual newspaper. It is, and it's something people should read. It is, however, also the CIA's number one propaganda asset. It has very, very strong input from CIA. And when I saw the New York Times and the equally CIA-influenced Washington Post flogging this 24/7, I said, oh, this is a psyop. This is an op. And indeed, it was. Again, on June 13th, of 2013, when this when the op was first being unleashed on the American people, again, my reaction was, you know, Planet of the Apes, the very first post from June 13th of 2013, Planet of the Apes, on the subject of those shocking, unquote, disclosures about NSA and GCHQ electronic surveillance, in parentheses, yawn. And I put part of the commentary about that, from that post in the written description for the record 890. Just a little bit of it. We experienced a mixture of genuine amusement and revulsion at the screeching over, quote, disclosures, unquote, that NSA and GCHQ, the UK equivalent of NSA, are engaged in a massive data mining and surveillance program involving cell phones and internet communications. For openers, this isn't new, to say the least. It's been going on for decades, scrutinizing phone calls at first, and then internet communications. On top of that, other countries do the same thing, including Germany. Much of the rest of the debate slash discussion about Eddie the Friendly Spook is foreshadowed or presented in this post as well. Again, the quote, disclosures, unquote, put forth by Snowden really are not new. In the 1990s, an international controversy broke when Germany accused the NSA and the GCHQ of using, among other facilities, the Menwith Hill, Yorkshire facility to conduct industrial espionage. There was a huge flap about the Echelon network. The Echelon network is basically the same thing as the Five Eyes Spying Club. It is an electronic intelligence gathering consortium composed of Great Britain, the U.S., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. And Germany began making noise about this back in the 1990s. And there was a big flap about that. And ultimately, as we will see, there was a European Parliamentary Commission put together to investigate this. After a year-long investigation, they concluded that many other European countries have the same capability. The point being, that this has basically been known for some time. Back when the story first broke, the controversy over the Echelon Network, the internet was new, and the social media and mobile technology had yet to come online. The monitoring programs have been extended predictably to mobile phones and to social media. What we're going to be doing in this program, among other things, is accessing some of the earlier material, not only to give us an idea of where the debate or the attacks on NSA and GCHQ are coming from, but also some of the nature of those who are doing the attacking. I also want to stress, obviously, many civil libertarians have climbed on the bandwagon. What the hell they were doing decades ago when this information is coming out is a question you would have to ask them. But when you look at the genesis of the assault on NSA and GCHQ, and the Snowden operation is the most recent and substantive of those attacks, they actually come from the far right. And what we're going to do now is to listen to an excerpt from, for the record, 166. This was recorded on August 4th of 1999.
I'm also going to review briefly an article which is terribly significant. I've spoken in the past about the German and EU pressure on the Menwith Hill National Security Agency station at Harrogate in Yorkshire in the United Kingdom. That, in turn, is part of the Echelon Signals Intelligence Network that is maintained by the United States and other members of the British Commonwealth, including Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. I've spoken in the past about German U.S. intelligence wars and their significance, and the Menwith Hill facility is one of the most secretive and important intelligence establishments in the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus. It also is very important to British intelligence, and to see Germany putting heat on Menwith Hill and on the Echelon network in turn is indicative of an absolute paradigm shift in international relations. And again, what we're seeing is a resumption of what in the 19th and early 20th centuries was called the Game of Nations, the struggle between world powers for dominance. And this particular article was also researched for us by a listener. It also comes from the Electronic Telegraph. This is an article by Tony Patterson in Berlin. It's dated April 11th of 1999. That was a Sunday. And it's headlined, U.S. Spy Satellites Raiding German Firm's Secrets. Security experts in Germany have uncovered new evidence of a big American industrial espionage operation in Europe using satellite listening posts in Britain and Germany. German business is thought to suffer annual losses of at least $7 billion through stolen inventions and development projects. With Europe already locked in a trade war with its American ally over bananas, Germany's high-tech industry wants its government to back a counteroffensive. The main centers used for satellite tapping of millions of confidential company telephone calls, fax, and email messages are believed to be terrestrial listening posts run by the American National Security Agency, or NSA, at Menwith Hill near Harrogate, North Yorkshire, and Bad Aibling, Bavaria, with the backing of the American government. Quote, industrial espionage is becoming increasingly aggressive. Secrets are being siphoned off to an extent never experienced until now, unquote, said Horst Telchik, T-E-L-T-S-C-H-I-K, a senior BMW board member and a former security advisor to Helmut Kohl. He is trying to coordinate a German business response to the spying problem. Well, first of all, there is, of course, industrial espionage that goes on as a matter of routine. The United States does conduct industrial espionage against Germany and other countries, and Germany does the same thing. A major center of German espionage in the United States and in other countries are the Goethe Institutes. They masquerade as cultural institutions and do serve that purpose to a certain extent, but they're fronts for German intelligence, according to Professor Wilhelm Stauffer, an expert on German intelligence who has alleged extensively the Goethe BND connection, and the Wilhelm Stauffer tapes are available from Spitfire. Beyond that, German firms in the United States conduct industrial espionage as a matter of routine. Here in the Silicon Valley, the Siemens firm is undoubtedly an epicenter of German espionage. And beyond that, in the Deutsche Bank's purchase of Bankers Trust. The Deutsche Bank officials indicated that the Bankers Trust purchase was basically effected in order to secure a Maryland-based venture capital firm called BT Alex Brown. That company is a venture capital firm heavily involved with Silicon Valley venture capital startups. And indeed, the Deutsche Bank indicated that the main reason for the purchase of Bankers Trust, whose chairman, by the way, was frozen off of the Deutsche Bank board of directors, the main reason for the purchase of Bankers Trust was to secure BT Alex Brown in order to significantly boost Deutsche Bank's involvement with Silicon Valley capitalization. That will also inevitably result in increased Silicon Valley espionage and the siphoning off of trade secrets. All of which is to say that the Germans do it to us and we do it to them. For the Germans to be scapegoating the Men with Hill listening station and the Echelon program for their economic problems is pure dribble, and I think indicates once again the resumption of the hostility between the nations and the resumption of what was called the Game of Nations. Again, both countries do it. Germany's economic problems stem from a lot of different sources, including reunification, a major reason for their problems, and it is not. Scapegoating the NSA is pure chauvinism and xenophobia in the worst way. It's not to say that we don't conduct espionage against them, industrial espionage, including through Men with Hill. Of course we do. They do the same thing to us. And I would note that it's a major element of German law that no foreign interest can own a controlling stake in any of the German core corporations, including Volkswagen, Siemens, Deutsche Bank, Daimler-Benz, or now Daimler-Chrysler, etc. That is forbidden by German law, and that's one of the areas where they get a leg up on others. More about Men with Hill. Apparently there is a campaign at the Men with Hill site in Harrogate in North Yorkshire to open up Men with Hill and Echelon. Research credit on this to a listener who mailed this in to me. This comes from the Yorkshire Evening Post. And their website, by the way, is www.yorkshire.evening/evening/post.co.uk. This is from Friday, July 16th of 1999. It's headlined, New Action at Spy Base. It reads in part, The peace campaign at the controversial Men with Hill spy base near Harrogate is set to be stepped up with the formation of a local forum to try to monitor the secret location. It follows a high court ruling this week where a judge granted campaigners a right to protest outside the American base during daylight hours. North Yorkshire County Council had been seeking an eviction order for the camp that has been based outside Men with Hill for 14 years. At a meeting in Otley last week, a group of councillors met with David Bowe, MEP for Yorkshire, and the Humber, peace campaigners and concerned residents. And they have agreed to meet on a quarterly basis to provide a focus for concerns and an attempt to monitor developments at the spy base. Mr. Bowe said, quote, We need to know what the satellite interceptions are being used for. We must ensure that the interests of Britain and other European states and their businesses are fully protected. Quote, The forum gives us the opportunity to bring together available information and coordinate pressures on Men with Hill to operate under proper legal and political controls, unquote. County Councillor John Eveleigh, Eveleigh, who chaired the meeting, said, quote, There is considerable concern locally about Men with's ongoing expansion, unquote. And Count Martin Herr, this may be Councillor, it's a C-O-U-N, Martin Hemingway added, quote, We want to shed more light on this secret place and ensure that its activities conform to the law, unquote. Well, Men with Hill and beyond that, the Echelon network maintained by the British Commonwealth, including Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, in addition to the United States, is absolutely vital for the national security of both the United States and the United Kingdom. The NSA is primarily concerned with signals intelligence. That is the focus of the Echelon network, and it is vital that security of those institutions not be compromised. This will sound perhaps strange to members of the listening audience. I have spent my entire life not only combating fascism, but attempting to highlight the need for reforms of the intelligence community. This is one area where I don't think the public has any business sticking their nose in, any more than they have any business having access to the launch codes for nuclear missiles. The areas where people should get involved with trying to democratize society, and that is critical, are in the areas of political involvement. People should, instead of sitting back watching things, get active politically, devote a certain amount of each time to political activity. They should respond to their media. They should get deeply involved with attempting to get the media or get the intelligence community out of the media. That is one of the main areas for intelligence reform, as well as preventing things like the assassinations of the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, the creation of AIDS, Project Harp, and a lot of other things that most people don't seem to be paying any attention to. I don't think the public has any business messing with Men with Hill or the Echelon Network. Beyond that, an article that to me indicates the proto-fascistic or fascistic nature of the heat being put on Men with Hill, and I'm not doubting the sincere democratic instinct of people who are concerned about it. I share those concerns. But the fact of the matter is, things like organizing unions to combat corporations, cleaning the intelligence community out of the media, preventing abuses like mind control, a political assassination, the trafficking in drugs, those are the areas where the public should be active in terms of democratizing intelligence functions. They have no business messing with Men with Hill or the Echelon Network, in my opinion. A critical article in this regard was carried, actually an op-ed column, was carried in the San Francisco Examiner of Monday, July 5th of 1999. This is an article by Lisa S. Dean, and it's about the Echelon Network, including Men with Hill, and it's headlined, Big Brother is Listening to You. And this is significant because Lisa Dean is director of the Free Congress Foundation Center for Technology Policy, the Free Congress Foundation, well known to veteran listeners to this program. It is a fascistic organization founded by Paul Weyrich, inextricably linked with the whole Galen ABN milieu that I've spoken about. And we talked about that at considerable length in Radio Free America 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, a prelude to World War III, unquote. We're going to reprise a section of that program in the next half-hour segment. This is Dateline Washington, and again, Lisa Dean of the Free Congress Foundation writes as follows. The little game is up. The cat is out of the bag. Or should I say that some Australian politicians are in orbit? You see, many different countries have participated in a spy satellite system. It is known as Echelon. But no one wanted to admit that the system either existed or that they were party to it, much like the blue code of silence, unquote, that has afflicted some police departments who cover for one another when the other commits a crime. Well, now Australians have broken the code of silence by officially admitting to what many of us have known for a long time, that Echelon exists and they are a part of it. It won't be long before other nations, including the United States, are forced to admit their involvement as well. After all, in Congress, Representative Bob Barr, Republican of Georgia, has already managed to get an amendment passed by the House that would force the intelligence community as well as law enforcement to set forth the standards and criteria by which they conduct foreign and domestic surveillance. While that amendment still has to pass the Senate and survive a Clinton veto, the fact that the House of Representatives is questioning our current government surveillance practices is significant. This concern will likely shed light on the very issues that entities such as the National Security Agency want kept in the dark, out of sight from the American people. It will likely force the agency to admit to the existence of Echelon and that the United States is the principal partner in this global surveillance network that is being used to not only spy on American citizens, but on foreign businesses. Put together by the National, by the way, note foreign businesses, and note Lisa Dean is with the Free Congress Foundation. It's a fascistic organization which, in my opinion, is part of a Nazi fifth column, literally a fifth column in this country, loyal to what I term the Underground Reich, and it is not an institution which in any size, shape, form, or manner is concerned with democracy or the rights of the American people. It is concerned with fascism, and its track record will speak for itself. I'm going to talk about that in the next half hour. But note here that she also, the aforementioned Lisa Dean, is concerned about America, about Echelon spying on foreign businesses. That's what the Germans are concerned about. Continuing. Put together by the National Security Agency, the Echelon system is said to be a network of satellite dishes here and in friendly nations intended for random interceptions of email, faxes, telex, and telephone communications carried by microwave. Computers and analysts sift through haystacks of messages for needles of information. Information gained from obtaining secrets about foreign competitors is passed on to American business leaders. That has kept many American businesses in the Clinton-Gore camp and has caused them to remain silent on issues they would normally oppose. During the Cold War from 1946 to 1989, many things were done by our government to keep ahead of the Soviets. Most Americans didn't want to know what was going on. They trusted their government to act in their interest. I have no quarrel with that. The Soviets were a serious enemy. Currently, we have no enemy of such stature. We have smaller problems such as Saddam Hussein and Slobodan Milosevic. I would add, with organizations like the Borman Organization, we have an even deadlier enemy than the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union really was not our enemy. They were trying to protect themselves from us. And most of what we were told about the Soviet Union was BS. It's not to say I hold a brief for their system. It was flawed, but they were not after us at any point. They were never under our beds and are not under their own anymore. Continuing. Perhaps if Echelon were monitoring their communications, it might be of significant benefit to us and our allies. But those of us who love freedom want to know why Echelon is needed to monitor our overseas communications. We want to know when and how it is being used against American citizens and to what extent. We want to know why our government has expanded its surveillance operations to include those whose rights they are supposed to be protecting. We might very well have a significant enemy in the future, and a spy system such as Echelon would play a critical role in its defeat. However, that enemy will be a foreign one. It will not be the people of the United States. So a word to the intelligence community. Stop testing your surveillance technology on the people whose welfare you are supposed to be looking after, and let's get Echelon out in the open to explore just exactly how and for what purpose it continues to function. Those words all sound very fine and nice if one does not understand the heritage of the Free Congress Foundation. On the other side of this tape, in the next half-hour segment, we're going to review a long segment from For the Record, or actually from RFA Program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. One of the reasons why I find this column so significant, it indicates to me that the destabilization of the United States that I've spoken about is well underway, and although the words sound nice, when one realizes that the Free Congress Foundation, who the employer of Lisa Dean, who wrote this article, has never at any point been concerned with the civil liberties or democratic rights of the United States or anybody else, their preoccupation with compromising the signals intelligence of the U.S. through the Echelon and Men with Hill stations takes on a very sinister character indeed.
That again, an excerpt from For the Record 166, that was recorded on August 4th of 1999. And we're going to not turn over the, at that point I was recording on tapes, but we are going to dip back into our written archives. And we are going to read about the Free Congress Foundation, and in particular, in the context of L'Affaire Snowden. One of the things that I had noted was that it was Eddie the Friendly Spook's journey to Russia that basically not only deep-sixed a summit conference between Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin, but it really marked the end of the attempts at rebooting with Russia and the beginning of the new Cold War. Basically, in For the Record 885, we took a look at what I call the Conga Line Ops, the Arab Spring, the Orange Revolution, WikiLeaks, L'Affaire Snowden, and the Maidan coup. They are all covert operations that are linked to one another. What we're going to do in this program is, what we're going to do right now is to take a look at the Free Congress Foundation and the exact nature of that organization. This is from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35 from the fall of 1990. And in addition to taking a look at the real nature of the Free Congress Foundation, an organization that is in no size, shape, form, or manner concerned with the civil liberties of Americans or anybody else. I think it is more than a little interesting, and take a look, too, at how the Free Congress Foundation's Liberation Branch was basically functioning as an extension of the Crusade for Freedom and was projecting the ABN/OUN elements back into the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, where many of them basically took root and began to precipitate fascism. Again, from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, from the fall of 1990. The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. This was co-authored by Russ Ballant, B-E-L-L-A-N-T, and Lewis Wolf. And it reads in part as follows. And this is the organization that was basically leading the charge against Menwith Hill and the Echelon Network, GCHQ, and NSA. Skipping down of the involvement of the Free Congress Foundation in the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. The involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern Europe and Soviet politics for quite some time. And it has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. The Free Congress Foundation, or FCF, was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, W-E-Y-R-I-C-H, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Coors family for both organizations. Weyrich has kept one foot in the right wing of the Republican Party while dallying with the racist right and the extreme Christian right. In 1976, for instance, he and a handful of other new rightists, William Rusher, Morton Blackwell, and Richard Viguerie, attempted to take over the Segregationist American Independent Party, or AIP, formed by George Wallace in 1968. The AIP was an amalgam of Ku Klux Klan and John Birch Society elements, skipping down. One of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to take power. Such nationalist and fascist elements are already evident in Lithuania and Ukraine. This, by the way, is from the fall of 1990. Take a look at how what is being discussed here directly anticipates what took place in Ukraine many years later. Speaking of Ukraine, and resuming with our text, in the latter republic, the pro-Nazi Organization of OUN, or an Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, has gained influence in several parties and has mobilized large demonstrations that honor OUN leaders who abetted Hitler's war on the Eastern Front. Similarly, several deputies in the Lithuanian Sąjūdis served in German military units in 1944, and Sąjūdis has made, that's S-A-J-U-D-I-S as in Sam, has made declarations against ethnic Russians living in Lithuania. According to some reports, Poles have also been denigrated. The Free Congress Foundation is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is Georgetown University Professor Charles Moser, M-O-S-E-R. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. The Ukrainian Quarterly has praised military units of the German SS and otherwise justified the OUN alliance with the Third Reich, which reflects the fact that the OUN was politically and militarily allied with Hitler and the Nazi occupation of the Ukraine. The OUN, an international semi-secret cadre organization headquartered in Bavaria, has received financial assistance from the late Franz Josef Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S, the rightist head of the Bavarian state. Strauss also had a working relationship with Weyrich. Finally, Free Congress Foundation's insinuation into the politics of the East must be judged by their selection of Laszlo Pastor, L-A-S-Z-L-O-P-A-S-C-T-O-R, to head their Liberation Support Alliance, quote, which seeks to liberate peoples in Central and Eastern European nations, unquote. Pastor's involvement in East European politics began in World War II when he joined the youth organization of the Arrow Cross, the Nazi Party of Hungary. When the Arrow Cross was installed in power by a German commando operation, Pastor was sent to Berlin to help facilitate the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Hitler. Pastor was tried and served 2 years in jail for his Arrow Cross activities after an anti-communist government was elected in Hungary in 1945. Pastor eventually came to the U.S. and established the ethnic arm of the Republican National Committee for Richard Nixon. He brought other Nazi collaborators from the Eastern Front into the GOP, some of whom were later found to have participated in mass murder during the war. The dormant Arrow Cross has surfaced again in Hungary, where there have been attempts to lift the ban on the organization. Pastor spent several months in Hungary. When Weyrich later conducted training there, he was provided a list of Pastor's contacts inside of Hungary. Weyrich reports that he conducted training for the recently formed and now governing New Democratic Forum. Pastor claims to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting National Endowment for Democracy funds through his advisory position with NED. Pierre Omidyar, by the way, worked closely with NED and had used that as well as AID to help fund the Maidan coup in February 2014. Continuing. Pastor in 1989 spoke at the Heritage Foundation under the sponsorship of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, a multinational umbrella organization of emigre fascists and Nazis founded in alliance with Hitler in 1943. The ABN is led by the Ukrainian OUN. Pastor spoke for the Hungarian organization of ABN, which is the Arrow Cross. And again, that is the nature of the organization that was saying, you know, tell the NSA to get to leave us alone, stop monitoring our communications. Those people are not in the least little bit concerned with people's well-being. By the way, eventually there was a European Parliament investigation of the Echelon system. The New York Times of September 6th of 2001, by Suzanne Daly, World Briefing, Europe Report on U.S. Spy System. The U.S.-led spying system known as Echelon can monitor virtually every communication in the world by email, phone, or fax that bounces off a satellite, the European Parliament was told. But in reporting on a year-long study, again going just about to August of 2000, reporting on a year-long study of the system was prompted by concern that American companies were using data from the system to gain a competitive edge, Gerhard Schmidt, a German member of the parliament, said that many European countries have similar abilities, unquote. And no doubt they were shocked to learn that there was gambling going on in that establishment. Again, this isn't post 9/11. Now, we're going to go back into the archives once again, and we're going to listen to a short excerpt of For the Record 541 from March of 2006. Another of the crusaders against the NSA spying program was none other than Grover Norquist.
Now, another key factor vis-a-vis the wiretap scandal, and that concerns the fact that none other than Grover Norquist, arguably the linchpin of the GOP right, has suddenly become terribly concerned with civil liberties, and he has joined with what is, to a certain extent at least, a liberal coalition in order to inveigh against this warrantless wiretapping. San Francisco Chronicle, Thursday, January 26th of 2006. Article by James Sterngold. It's headlined, Political Opposites Aligned Against Bush Wiretaps. And this concerns Grover Norquist. Grover Norquist is one of the most influential conservative Republicans in Washington. His weekly Wednesday meeting at his L Street office is a must for conservative strategists, and he has been called the managing director of the hardcore right by the liberal Nation magazine. Perhaps the nation's leading anti-tax enthusiast, he is, like Diamond, a hawk in the war on terror. Yes, he is a hawk on the war on terror, but as we have seen in many broadcasts, Grover Norquist is in fact the lobbyist for some of the most heinous terrorists and terror-linked elements in the country. His Islamic Institute, part of the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, was basically a repository for al-Taqwa, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and al-Qaeda-related elements, and Norquist was the personal lobbyist for many of these people. In a number of broadcasts that will be cited in the description, for the record, 541, some of Norquist's heinous representation of the very terrorists the Bush administration professes to be against will be discussed at some length. And by the way, the Norquist cloud has not been raised from the national security establishment. Again, I think that Norquist's concern, as he says, he's worried that Hillary Clinton or somebody like her could eventually come into this information. If the truth were ever to fully be disclosed, it would reveal that Grover Norquist and his ilk are in fact running interference for the very terrorists that are our enemy in this war, something that has unfortunately escaped a lot of people's notice.
That again from For the Record 541 from March of 2009. The article again was from the San Francisco Chronicle of January 26th of 2006 by James Sterngold, Political Opposites Aligned Against Bush Wiretaps. And excerpting that article, Norquist is one of the most influential conservative Republicans in Washington. His weekly Wednesday meeting at his L Street office is a must for conservative strategists and has been called the managing director of the hardcore right. And again, he is one of the people who was leading, well, not leading the charge, but he was lending his efforts to the attack on the NSA's wiretap program. And again, he is not someone who is a flying expletive deleted about people's rights or their welfare or their civil liberties. He is, however, someone who has been running interference for the Muslim Brotherhood and for the Islamic fascist milieu that the transnational corporations and their allied factions of U.S. and foreign intelligence have been promoting. What we're going to do next is to take a look at, actually we're going to listen to, For the Record, 706, Barack Obama as the Last Casualty of World War II. This is from May of 2010. And again, this is a full 3 years plus before the, quote, shocking, unquote, disclosures of Edward Snowden. And this is an interview with John Loftus.
For example, wiretapping. When I worked for the Justice Department, I discovered how the Justice Department had altered the legislation about controlling wiretapping in the U.S. And they said they changed it to forbid all wiretapping of American citizens, and they said to forbid all wiretapping of American citizens by the NSA. And what that did was permit British intelligence to use American computers to bug American citizens. At the same time, the American government was using the British equivalent of the NSA, the GCHQ, to wiretap British citizens, and each side was exchanging information. And because of a World War II rule, even Congress couldn't be told about this top secret intelligence exchange. It was one of the addendum to the ultra secret. Well, they kept it going to hide the fact that we were bugging our own citizens. Now, the technology got so much better that it wasn't just cables, we could do voice intercepts. And so the Canadian government, there was one guy, a defector, from who wrote how he had been asked to help wiretap the U.S. Congress. Well, the sequel to that is that the U.S. Congress somehow gave Canada the right to build their embassy. It's the closest building on the mall to the West Front of Congress. And the West Front, of course, is where all the congressional offices are, because you have the beautiful view of the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Monument beyond. So you can literally point a laser at a pane of glass, and as the laser slightly resonates from the voices within, you can decode what they're saying and record it.
Oh, goody.
So will that, well,
the Bill of Rights is meaningless. This, the Justice Department's loophole means you don't have to have search warrants. I mean, maybe I should explain how the technical stuff works. Every day, NSA and GCHQ record every microwave phone call in America and around the world. Now, microwaves, of course, are those things that go from the little round dishes on the top of towers, cell phone towers. And for a while there, our Supreme Court actually ruled that anything off the microwave was actually a radio wave and no search warrants were needed, and that got quickly changed by Congress. What they don't know is that the British still record all those microwaves in America. We still record all the microwaves in Britain and around the world. So anytime you make an international phone call or a domestic phone, long-distance call, your conversation is recorded, all of them. It's called a vacuum cleaner approach.
Mm-hmm.
Every telephone call you make outside of a local routine call is recorded, and then the computer can be targeted to search for the sound of your voice or keywords such as Israel, nuclear. And, you know, it's every conversation can be overheard. Now, this has been a great help in the hunt for terrorists, but there is no international oversight board. There is no checks and balances. And, you know, I think that we need to have a better balance between the need for intelligence efficiency and the need for democratic oversight. We haven't struck that balance yet.
Well, from a technical intelligence analysis standpoint, one of the things that I've always wondered about the vacuum cleaner approach, and again, it apparently has uncovered some very important terror connections, but there was a late 19th century intelligence methodology developed by Wilhelm Stieber, I think his name was. He was Bismarck's intelligence chief, and yet he was just a honeycomb, the potential enemy with informants, operatives, and also secret combatants. And it did provide a treasure trove of intelligence, just a wealth of information, as well as having people on the ground who could sabotage bridges and roadways. And this worked very well in the Franco-Prussian War, but it developed a bottleneck when it came to analysis, because you had all this stuff coming in, and then sorting that out as to what was useful, what wasn't, what was irrelevant, what might be even misleading. And I've just wondered how the electronic vacuum cleaner approach, how it manages to avoid the vulnerabilities of the outmoded Stieber system.
You know what? It's actually made it worse. I had one guy tell me the NSA produces 40 tons of paper every day that has to be trashed and pulped. And they said, any agency that produces 40 tons of garbage has no time to read it. So we actually have so much information pouring in. I'm talking to guys now that they get in their desk, and all these satellite photos are there waiting for them. It takes up half their day just to review them. So there's actually less time for analysis, and they're just skimming through all this data collection.
Matt McGinn from For the Record 706 from May of 2010, more than 3 years before Edward Snowden's, quote, shocking, unquote, disclosures. Of the point being, and by the way, I was interviewing John Loftus, the point being that this is not new. Again, this isn't an exercise in self-exaltation or puffery, but this has been on the public record for a long time. The Snowden thing is an op. We're going to conclude by taking a look at a comparison of some analysis of the
Star Wars ballroom that is the Republican presidential primary field and their economic views, and the economic views of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the man I call, among other things, the Peach Fuzz Fascist. New York Times, February 12th of 2016, on Economic Stupidity by Paul Krugman. Talking about the Republicans. Leading the charge of the utterly crazy is, you won't be surprised to hear, Donald Trump, who has accused the Fed of being in the tank for Democrats. A few months ago, he asserted that Janet Yellen, chairwoman of the Fed, hadn't raised rates, quote, because Obama told her not to, unquote. Never mind the fact that inflation remains below the Fed's target, and that in the light of current events, even the Fed's small December rate hike now looks like a mistake, as a number of us warned it was. Yet the truth is that Mr. Trump's position isn't that far from the Republican mainstream. After all, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, not only berated Ben Bernanke, Ms. Yellen's predecessor, for policies that allegedly risked inflation but never materialized, but he also dabbled in conspiracy theorizing, accusing Mr. Bernanke of acting, quote, to bail out fiscal policy, unquote. Skipping down. Now, the idea of making the Fed accountable sounds good, but Wall Street isn't the only source of malign pressure on the Fed. And in the actually existing U.S. political situation, such a bill would essentially empower the cranks, the gold standard-loving, hyperinflation-is-coming types who dominate the modern GOP and have spent the past 5 or 6 years trying to bully monetary policymakers into ceasing and desisting from their efforts to prevent economic disaster. And that applies just perfectly to Edward Snowden. New Republic, January 19th of 2014, article by Sean Wilentz, W-I-L-E-N-T-Z. Would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you know what they really thought? And this quotes Edward Snowden on a chat board in 2009 when he was assigned to Geneva, Switzerland as an officer of the CIA. And Snowden, under the posting under the name of the true hoo-ha, save money, cut this Social Security, skipping down. Somehow our society managed to make it hundreds of years without Social Security just fine. Magically, the world changed after the New Deal, and old people became made of glass. Later in the same session, Snowden wrote that the elderly, quote, wouldn't be effing helpless if you weren't sending them effing checks to sit on their A-blank-blank and lay in hospitals all day. And you can read it in all of its vulgar glory in the description for the show. Now, again, compare what Paul Krugman, or the way Paul Krugman described the Star Wars bar scene that is the Republican presidential primary field. Compare this with Edward Snowden from June 26th of 2013, article by Joe Mullen, M-U-L-L-I-N, on the Ars Technica blog. In 2009, Ed Snowden said leakers should be shot. Then he became one. Skipping down. As for those who didn't agree with him about the rightness of the gold standard or the need to eliminate Social Security, they weren't just mistaken. They were, quote, retards, unquote. In his more hyperbolic moments, Snowden spoke about the fall of the dollar in near-apocalyptic terms. It seems like the USD and the GBP, the dollar and the pound, are both likely to go the way of the Zimbabwe dollar, he suggested in March of 2009, especially with that C-blank-blank-blank bag Bernanke deciding to magically print $1.2 trillion. And skipping down, Obama was, quote, planning to devalue the currency absolutely as fast as theoretically possible, he wrote. Again, that is Edward Snowden. He is at one with the likes of Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and the rest. In our next program, we are going to take a look at his role as a CIA officer when he suddenly decided, oh my gosh, I've got to help my fellow human beings. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. But be sure to tune in next week for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes, for the record, 890. Tracking from the far right, update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on February 19th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.